News, I'm Greta Cunningham.
Thanks, Greta. 6 minutes past 12 o'clock. Reminder that today's programming is made possible in part by the advocates of Minnesota Public Radio. Contributors include the McKnight Foundation, working to strengthen families and communities. And good afternoon. Welcome back to Midday on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Gary Eichten. Glad you could join us. Today on Midday, we are focusing on the Minnesota legislative session, the day after the regular session, and who knows how many days before the special session. Last hour, as you heard, we spoke with Governor Jesse Ventura about the legislature's failure to finish its work by last night's constitutionally mandated adjournment deadline. This hour, legislative leaders Roger Moe and Steve Swigum are joining us from our bureau at the state capitol to share their thoughts on what's happened and what happens next. They're also on hand to take your questions. So if you have a question for House Speaker Steve Swigum or Senate Majority Leader Roger Moe, give us a call here. Our Twin City area number is 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Now, House Speaker Steve Swigum has apparently been delayed just a little bit, but Senate Majority Leader Roger Moe is standing by. Senator, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Gary, and the speaker just walked in, so
okay.
we have a full house here.
All right. Well, while he gets himself settled in, let me put this question to you, and then I'll ask him as well. Could you, in layman's terms, for those folks who don't follow the legislative process, briefly just explain what's, in your mind, what's at the heart of the stalemate at this point?
A couple of things, certainly some different philosophies, some hard positions on some of these very important issues like tax policy and the necessary kinds of investments that are important to the future of the state. But I would add to that the fact that we have three different budgets, three different tax plans, and three different ideas on how to appropriate the resources. That coupled with the fact that I know in the Senate we tried to give the House, or excuse me, tried to give the governor every opportunity to sell his overall tax proposal. We gave them probably more time than we should have because we wanted to see if they could make the sale, so to speak. Unfortunately, they had a difficult time on a major component of that, which was broadening the sales tax, and that obviously was a piece of a very important part of his overall plan. Now we've kind of gone back from that and tried to put other kinds of reforms in place that are important, and we've agreed that we would go along with the 100% ed levy buy-off by the state and other things, but I think a combination of just some philosophic differences as well as the number of plans that we had and the complexity of them.
Speaker Swigum, welcome to the program.
Hi, Gary.
Hi. Let me put the same question to you. Just in basic layman's terms, for folks who don't follow the legislative process, what do you see as being at the heart of the stalemate?
Well, I think it's probably right now centered down to the property tax reform bill, what the property tax reform bill looks like. And I think we've all pretty well decided that we're going to do property tax reform that's substantial, significant. I may mention that this, I think, is our opportunity in Minnesota to do landmark property tax reform for the first time in decades. That's permanent, and it will be there for a long, long time. How that reform looks, of course, means different things to different people, Gary. And I think another part of that would be how the education bill, and some equalization aid factors in with the property tax bill. They're interrelated, they're interconnected, as well as some of the other spending bills are as well. So, you know, that's kind of the nutshell of the difference right now. And I believe we've made progress, Gary. I really honestly believe we've made progress, and that we're going to have options. We're going to have ways that we can bridge some gaps to make sure we move forward in progress for everybody in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. What's on the schedule for today now? You folks are going to be meeting today to try to make some more progress, or what's planned?
Well, as soon as Senator Moe and I get done here, I think we're planning to meet in his office to speak about the negotiations, the global negotiations, we call them, that are going on. The Senate Tax Conference Committee is going to be meeting, and this is we really enjoy the opportunity to be together this morning. We've been now in, I think, five different media events of some type or another. So, between NPR and a few radio stations and a few TV shows that we've done together this morning, we haven't had a chance to sit down and negotiate and talk about the numbers yet.
Well, you could do it right on the air. That'd be fine. Now, Governor Ventura indicated that he is thinking about making a precondition for calling a special session, an agreement from you folks that you will allow a floor vote in both the House and the Senate on the unicameral issue. Would you be open to such an agreement, Senator Moe?
I think that the governor and the speaker on behalf of the House and myself on behalf of the Senate, we will probably all have a number of requests as we approach a date for the special session. And so I don't rule in nor do I rule out any of the potential requests that will be made by the House, the Senate, nor the administration.
Speaker Swigum?
Gary, this is going to sound like an ironic answer from myself in regards to your specific question. As I am a unicameral supporter, was the author of the bill last year, and I believe in the unicameral as far as its effect upon the accountability, the openness of the process. I don't believe, however, it should be part of a one-day special session. We've focused down to the seven remaining appropriation bills, the tax bill, of course, which is paramount. I think the one-day special session should be on those eight bills, in and out in one day. And, you know, I just don't think that the unicameral issue should be part of that special session, or otherwise we can make 10 other issues part of the special session as well. And the one-day special session, Gary, would enter to 2 to 3 to maybe 2 weeks. And I don't think that's what the special session should be for. So I would refrain from that. Understand, the governor kind of holds all the cards, though. I mean, he holds the trigger. He's the only person who can call us into special session. And if he makes certain demands, you know, what are Senator Moe and I going to say? You know, we don't think we should be doing that. It's inappropriate. It's wrong. Shouldn't be part of the special session. But if he makes the demands, he has some ability to, because he holds the trigger, Gary, that is the good senator and I don't have.
Mm-hmm. In terms of holding the trigger, as it were, he's also said that you folks should forego any per diem payments. He also suggested yesterday forego your salaries, and your staff should even forego its salaries during a special session. Would you be open to that?
Well, first of all, the session employees, the ones that we hire on, I believe, at least from the Senate's point of view, those have already have been laid off, so to speak, who they served through the session, and they're gone. The rest are full-time employees. You know, that makes for wonderful rhetoric, but the bottom line is that I think for a one-day special session, in the cost to the Senate, which would be cost to the taxpayers, would be $7,800 for a one-day special session. That includes per diem and mileage for people who have to drive in here. I guess if that seems to be too much, I don't think that's too much to try to get this resolved. And the bottom line is that a number of us will be around here trying to negotiate. Conferees will be negotiating. And what we'll end up doing is we will reach an agreement, and everybody will basically sign off on it, and the governor will then call a one-day special session. It's not unusual. It's been done before. As a matter of fact, I think we've had 39 special sessions during the course of this, the history of the state, and so this is not unusual. We can get it done. It's going to take a little, obviously, a little flexibility on all of our parts.
Mr. Speaker?
You know, the comments of the governor, I don't mind for going the special session day per diem. That's not a big deal, Gary. In fact, I've done that in the past when we've had special sessions. But you know, when you start talking about our staff forgoing their salaries for the preparation of the day, you know, that's probably not the right direction to be going. And you know, I think we get to work at this cooperatively rather than the sound bites that the governor is doing. You know, if we wanted to raise the rhetoric level, you know, we could say, well, should the governor be foregoing his salary when he did his XFL sticks, or when he did the wrestling and the refereeing of the wrestling World Mania or whatever? Should he be foregoing his salaries at that time, or should he be getting into the questions of his staff use at those times? Yeah, I don't think that moves us ahead. I don't think it moves us anyplace in a positive direction. So, you know, I'll forgive my per diem that if we're going with that. That's not a problem. But I'm not sure I'm going to do that, make that a requirement of other members and or certainly not our staff.
Well, let's get some listeners involved here. We're speaking this hour with Minnesota legislative leaders, Steve Swigum. He is the Speaker of the Minnesota House, which is controlled by Republicans. Speaker Swigum, obviously a Republican. And over in the Senate, Roger Moe has joined us, Senate Majority Leader. He is a DFLer. The Senate is controlled by the DFL. We're talking this hour about the legislative session, what happens next, just how this stalemate might be resolved, some of the issues, how they're going to play out. If you'd like to join our conversation, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. A couple of reminders, some interesting material on our website, minnesotapublicradio.org. There is a wealth of information about these issues and the legislative process and the rest. There is also a soapbox. You can get up on that and have your say. And there is a survey being conducted right now about whether or not your views on the unicameral legislative issue have changed. The governor has been arguing that it may be possible we wouldn't be in this current state we are if we had moved to a unicameral legislature. So here's an opportunity to weigh in on that. Bernadette, you're first. Go ahead, please.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. And I'd first like to thank all the members of legislatures. I think people on both sides are doing a great job, and you should all be proud of yourself. And I just have a comment, and my comment is I don't want you to hurry up and rush this. I would rather have you go into a special session, take your time, and get it done right. I know the governor always likes to compare you to a business, but business CEOs and business do not meet 5 months out of the year and then let their business go through the rest of the year. They meet throughout the year, and they extend deadlines when needed. And you know, you have no obligation to the governor. Your obligation is to the people of Minnesota and to get it done right for the people of Minnesota.
Okay, ringing endorsement. Gentlemen, the governor said today, though, and apparently he had mentioned earlier, too, he said, well, really, what's changed? I mean, why is it that you could reach an agreement now when you couldn't a week ago?
Well, we will reach agreement. I'm confident of that. I think we both mentioned that you have three different plans, three different ideas, three different versions. And I'd listened to part of the governor, and he seems to imply that no progress has been made. I can assure the listeners that that both the speaker and I would tell everybody that a lot of progress has been made. Whatever work has been done, we're not going back. That's ground that's been plowed. We literally are treating midnight last night like it has no inhibitions on our moving ahead and conferring out the bills. So we will just continue the process, even though it doesn't have a kind of a legal standing. We will continue the process as we have been and continue to get the bills conferred and work out our differences. I can assure everybody we are moving ahead, and that we will get all of this done. We have some difference of opinion, as the speaker said. The property tax issue is a big issue. The investments that we're looking at, those are certainly key in this process as well. But we're making progress. We'll get it done, and it will demand, obviously, some flexibility on the part of the administration and the House and the Senate.
Speaker Swigum, what's changed that will allow you finally now to get to an agreement where over the last 4.5 months you were unable to reach an agreement?
First of all, Gary, I don't think it's fair to say over 4.5 months we were not able to. We spent a great deal of that time listening to the citizens of the state. We spent February, March, our committees in April, listening to folks going around the state, traveling to Winona, traveling to North Mankato, traveling to Alexandria. I know the Senate did some of the same. So that's a good activity to listen to citizens and then respond to them. I think, first of all, more time in the negotiations is appropriate. We will do that. But, you know, what's changed is probably my hope is that we'll be able to have a special session by the end of May, the first part of June. One day in and out, I think that's ideal. Obviously, if we get into June, Gary, and the negotiations take place, the time frame that changes is at the end of June, June 30th, starting new fiscal calendar, July 1st. There's a real crucial change there, and that would be the correctional facilities don't have any dollars. The development disabled care centers don't have any dollars. The nursing homes, the MA payments would not be made. So that certainly does change when you push up to the June 30th date. But it's our sincere hope that we don't push up to that date.
Mm-hmm. Bob, your question, please.
Yeah. First of all, I don't understand. You were there for 5 months, and you can't get anything done except worrying about kids' tattoos and the pop deal and that, and then you take a week off for Easter. Because I agree with what the governor has said. As far as you getting paid, I don't think you should get paid. And then I don't think your staff should get paid, because then maybe over there the people would take their jobs a lot more serious. I just have one question for Roger Moe, and that, because he seems to be the only one that I really got a bone to pick with, and that is, that when he goes to the store and buys something and he gives an $8 item, gives him a $10 bill, doesn't he expect to get back $2? I mean, the taxpayers here have paid their bill, and that was all over. I don't understand why he fights so hard that we don't get it back. Thank you.
All right. Senator Moore, I assume he's talking about the rebate.
We've agreed that the rebate will go back. The only suggestion that the Senate has made to the House and to the governor is that they ought to seriously look at the option of maybe putting the money in the budget reserve as a possibility, or some combination of budget reserve and rebate, simply because I think we have a sense of some uncertainty about the future economic condition of the state. I think we all know that the economy has slipped some, and that's going to have an impact. But that issue basically has been resolved, so I hope Bob will be able to sleep better.
Yeah. Bob, we're from the House side. I would agree with Roger that the rebate has basically been discussed and agreed to in our global negotiations, and that will be forthcoming. You know, that's the overage of taxation from this biennium, probably about $400 per person would be the check. But also, we have that overage of taxation, that surplus we're dealing with in the next biennium, and that, Bob, that gets to be a lot of the discussion between how much property tax reduction, where it will go, versus how much increases in spending, or as Roger would say, investments. The one thing I would just like to again clarify in regards to the governor's criticism of the legislature, and believe me, I would like to be done. I know Senator Moe would like to be done. We do have families, we do have work jobs to get home to, and I just as soon be there right now, to be very, very honest, home with my family. If we had our brothers, you know, you do your service. But when the governor says, well, I presented my budget, so I'm done, you know, I don't think that's fair for him to say that, because we could say the same thing in the House. When we passed our tax bill and our spending bills out of the House 3 weeks ago, we could say we're done. And the Senate could do the same in regards to the bills they passed off the Senate floor. They're done. Well, we've got the three different positions. Now the governor has to be involved with the House and Senate to work out the differences that exist. I don't think it's fair just to say, you know, I submitted my budget, so that's all I have to do, as the governor is, you know, kind of portraying.
Mm-hmm. Bob, your question, please. Hello, Bob. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, this is James.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got the wrong number there. Well, go ahead,
that's
James.
Okay. I just have a thanks for taking the call, anyways. And I just have a couple quick questions. The first one is, I'm pretty much in the area that makes, you know, less than 75K, and I consider, you know, we're blue collar. We are the wheels and the transmission of pretty much the entire economy. And I want to know what kind of a break, you know, us people on the lower end of the stick are going to get that actually helps us out. You know, specifically, you know, areas that we're going to get it. And the only other comment I have to make is I do agree with the governor's analogy of being the last-minute school children. I mean, if you guys really were concerned about your people, I feel you would have it done a long time ago. You could have come to an agreement. And I'll go offline and take your response.
All right. Well, let's focus on the tax break. Is there, as these tax negotiations roll along now, is there anything for the little guy, as James would describe himself?
Well, I would suggest that there's a lot for the average Minnesotan that we're talking about in the tax bills. I mean, we're talking about significant permanent property tax reduction, which will affect homes, affect apartments, affect commercial industrial property, affect seasonal recreational property, affect farms in the state of Minnesota. And, you know, the House bill that passed, the Senate bill that passed, both reduces those tax burdens to some degree. I think the House bill actually, honestly, a little to a greater degree than the Senate bill. James, so, you know, that is in there for you. You can expect, James, to expect that your property tax payment on your home, on your farm, or if you rent on the amount of the rent that you pay that goes towards property tax for the apartment owner, that will be going down when we finally end up with a bill that passes. And then, of course, you've got the education bills that affect you, the sick tax reduction in the House side. James, we could have been done at the end of four and a half months, Jim, for sure. Absolutely for sure. But, you know, then you get to the position of, I think you got to respect that sometimes people have principles that they stand upon too. Now, they might be different and they might be hard to bridge. But rather than Roger Moe just caving into the House or the House caving into the Senate, you know, I think there should be a respectful understanding of the difference and that people do stand for some principle too, rather than just selling them out.
Senator Moe?
Well, first of all, to Jim and other listeners, it takes a lot of time to go through the budget, a biannual budget of the state. We're talking $26, $28 billion. And this is one person's suggestion as to how those resources should be spent in terms of delivering various programs or in terms of how the tax policy ought to be. I don't think Jim would want us just simply to take any governor's budget and tax policy and pass it and go home. I think we owe the taxpayers of Minnesota to face up to our responsibilities to go through those budgets and to make decisions based upon what would also be our interpretation of the public's agenda. So it takes time. And if anybody thinks that you can go through stacks and stacks of budget documents in a matter of just a couple of weeks, and gosh, then we've done our job, that is not how it works. But let's just say we had done it. What if the Speaker and I would have said, well, let's just do that. Jim would be paying sales taxes on a lot of items today that he's not now paying sales taxes on. He would go to the barber and he'd get a haircut. He'd pay a sales tax on that now because that's what the governor suggested. He'd go and get his, if a plumber came in to fix his plumbing, he'd have to pay sales tax on the time that the plumber had put in. Again, there are a whole host of things that have to be looked at in all of this. But as it relates to property taxes, no question about it. I think that Jim will see a property tax break in his house. We just simply want to make sure that it's fair. Also, there are things that can turn out to be costs to Jim and his family that by the right kinds of investments you can avoid. I don't know, maybe Jim has children that are about to go to college. And as you know, most in Minnesota go to public institutions. And if we can make the right kind of investments that avoid large tuition increases, then Jim and his family doesn't have to pay those tuition increases. So I think that there are a lot of ways that you have to look at this. You can't just isolate any one thing when you talk about a budget as large as Minnesota's budget or a tax policy as complex as our tax policy.
Well, let's get Bob's question on the air. I finally got the right button punched. Bob, quick question here before we break for news.
Thank you. Here's a simple question, and yet a very perplexing one to me. After almost 5 months, we have a standoff. And according to the governor, you two did not meet face-to-face for a meeting until just a week ago. How can that happen? Politics is the art of compromise. And if you two didn't sit together in April and say, look, what are these problems we're facing? I can see why the job's not done. You two are the leaders. People follow you two. And there's got to be a give and take. And why didn't you two meet? Could I have just each one of you answer that question for me?
All right, gentlemen.
Bob, the simple answer is the governor's just wrong. we have met. We have met throughout the session. You know, of course, we do wait for our bills ultimately in relationship to the fiscal matters to pass the House and Senate floors, the tax bill and the spending bills. That took place probably 2 weeks ago, but Senator Moe and I have met on a number of things during the session, basically starting on the target budget 2 weeks ago.
Now, the governor, though, he has been frequently quoted, and again, I said today, he got you guys together 9 days before the end of the session, and that was the first time you met.
Well, again, you know, I sure hope your listeners don't believe everything the governor says, because if they do, they're falling for a lot of strange lines. Bottom line is that the speaker and I and our staffs are in constant communication. The various budget chairs have discussions with the other budget chairs. We have appropriately passed our respective budgets, and we're trying to work out our differences.
We're speaking this hour with Minnesota legislative leaders Roger Moe, he is the Senate Majority Leader, and Steve Swigum, who is the Speaker of the Minnesota House, talking about the legislative session. What happened? Of course, the legislature adjourned last night at midnight. Still lots of business to finish, though. And as a consequence, what we can expect now in the next few weeks as the special session will be needed to finish the work. If you'd like to join our conversation, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. And again, don't forget about the survey that we're conducting online at minnesotapublicradio.org as to whether your thoughts on a unicameral legislature have changed as a result of this legislative session. We'll get to more of your calls here in a couple of minutes. Right now, here's Greta Cunningham with some headlines. Greta?
Good afternoon, Gary. President Bush is demanding that the Senate stop delaying and move forward on its tax cut plan. Bush says the nation needs a tax cut because it will benefit the economy. Democrats have been stalling the plan by forcing vote after vote on amendments in the Senate. Once it passes the Senate, the measure will go to a House-Senate conference committee. President Bush has talked by phone to Egypt's President Hosni Mubarak and Jordan's King Abdullah. A senior official says Bush got positive feedback about sending a new Mideast envoy to the region. Aides say President Bush is getting personally involved in stepping up the pace of diplomacy in the Middle East. Ford's chief executive is on Capitol Hill today making the auto company's case against Bridgestone Firestone. Sources say later today he'll unveil Ford's plans to move on its own to replace up to 13 million Firestone tires. Ford's decision comes a day after the tire company severed its 95-year relationship with Ford. The company insists its tires are safe and that the problem is with Ford's Explorers. In regional news, Governor Ventura says he hasn't decided yet when to call lawmakers back for a special session. But when he does, Ventura says he may require them to vote on whether to put the unicameral question to Minnesota voters. The regular session adjourned at midnight with no agreement on major tax and spending bills. Minnesota is experiencing a cold snap today. Several locations today are reporting temperatures in the 30s. Forecasters say colder than normal weather will remain in the area for a couple of days. The mercury will top out at reading some 15 to 20 degrees lower than normal and more than 40 degrees lower than a week ago. Brainerd currently has a temperature of 39 degrees. It's 34 degrees in Thief River Falls, and there are reports of light snow and 34 degrees in Bemidji. There is a wind advisory for northwestern Minnesota today. It will be cloudy, blustery, and cold throughout the state, with periods of showers possible. High temperatures today near 48 to 58 degrees. Right now, Rochester reports light rain in 45 degrees. It's cloudy in Moorhead in 47. It's raining in Duluth in 43. And in the Twin Cities, some light rain with a temperature of 44. Gary, that's a look at the latest news.
All right, thanks, Greta. 25 minutes before 1 o'clock, this is Midday coming to you on Minnesota Public Radio. And our guest this hour, the Speaker of the Minnesota House, Steve Swigum, and Senate Majority Leader, Roger Moe, joining us from our bureau at the State Capitol as we look back at the 2001 regular legislative session just concluded late last night and the 2001 special legislative session, which will be called sometime soon to finish the work of the regular legislative session. Patrick's on the line with a question for the leadership. Go ahead, Patrick.
Hi. Thank you, gentlemen. My question is the uniqueness of three-party negotiations. I wanted each of you, being old veterans, what it's like being in a three-way negotiation to comment on that. And specifically in this closed-door meeting last week, is it true, Steve Sangam, that Governor Ventura said to you at the end of it that he's going to bury you?
Patrick, I guess I'd just soon not talk about conversations behind doors with the governor. I would tell you that the discussion got a little bit heated. Fortunately, Senator Moe and Senator Hardinger were in the next room. I guess they had slipped out as Plenty and I came back in. It did become a little heated, very honestly. The governor did use some words similar to what you're speaking, Patrick, to be sure. The three party, the original question you had, the one thing about the three parties governing Minnesota in the tripartisan stool is we really end up with balance for Minnesotans. Ultimately, at the end, the product ends up to be very, very balanced. You know, we've seen in 1999, Patrick, that basically at the end of the session, at that time, we were kind of in a stalemate situation. The governor decided that he would join the House in across-the-board income tax cuts. That kind of broke that log jam. In the year 2000, we kind of came up with, or excuse me, Senator Moe actually came up with the idea of the third difference when we were kind of in a stalemate. This year, we weren't able to come up with a similar type of a gimmick, if you would like to call it that. I think the product ends up to be really, really good balance for the state of Minnesota and for citizens from north to south, from the metropolitan area to rural Minnesota. Unfortunately, the process is a little bit difficult with three different groups at some time.
Senator Moe, is this tougher working in a tripartisan atmosphere than it was when there were just two parties? Seemed like there was just as many special sessions when there were only two parties to deal with.
I think that's true. I was reading in one of the newspapers today where actually there's as many special sessions or more in Nebraska than there have been in Minnesota, so that should tell you something about the unicameral system. I think under the Carlson administration we had six or seven special sessions, and certainly we had a few under the Perpich administration and the Quay administration. I think we had seven or eight special sessions, so having a special session is not uncommon. We will work it out. As long as everybody's engaged, and that requires the governor to be engaged as well, we will work out our differences. It certainly is going to be, it's going to require some flexibility on everybody's part, but I think we can get there.
Speaker Swigum, Governor Ventura indicated last hour that there were some things that he simply would find unacceptable, no matter what kind of agreements are worked out between the Senate and the House. One would be that abortion waiting period provision that's contained in the Health and Human Services bill. Are you going to pull that out to avoid a veto and further negotiation on that issue?
Gary, on that issue in particular, of course, it is in the House bill. It is not in the Senate bill at this time as it goes to the conference committee. I'd suspect that you'd expect the House members to stand up for the House position. I know this is a volatile, emotional issue, a very moderate provision. The senator and I happen to disagree upon that. And, let me just say that from my standpoint, when you look at the support that it had in the House, a great majority of the members of the House, originally in the Senate, a pretty good majority in the Senate, I think the first time it went through was 36-31 vote, and by our own Minnesota poll, done by the Minnesota poll 3 weeks ago, a support of Minnesotans on a 2-to-1 basis. It's a pretty moderate, well-accepted provision. I think you'd expect the House to fight for the House provision, whether we prevail at the end or not. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Senator Moe, could you go along with leaving that provision in the bill and recommending to the governor that he not veto it, that you get a good Health and Human Services bill passed, even with that kind of a provision in it?
Well, I think the governor's been very clear on that. He's already vetoed the bill once with that provision in it, and I just think that it's somewhat reckless to put in jeopardy reimbursement formulas for providers, We hope we can negotiate out a COLA increase for nursing home workers. The Senate bill that passed had scholarship and tuition waivers for health care workers and an effort to insure children who are uninsured. It just seems to me that the potential of putting all of that in jeopardy over language that could very well move on its own, I think, is a bit reckless. So I certainly hope that that's not the case.
Mm-hmm. On education, the governor indicated today that he recognizes that that you folks ultimately will approve spending more on K-12 education than he's recommended. But he said he's not going to accept that bill unless you include in that bill a provision which would require school districts to balance their budget, essentially, not sign teacher contracts that would force the school district to spend more money than it has. Can you go along with that provision?
Well, we certainly will in the House. We have basically the governor's language in the House bill regarding structural balance. We also have, which by the way is a very, very, I think, important accountable provision to taxpayers, to parents of local school districts. It would be similar to what the state has to do, or any government unit, as they look forward to balancing their revenues and their expenditures into the future. We'll fight strongly for that position. We have about four or five other accountability type of features in the House bill as well, Gary, including a special audit be done by Standard and Poor's on each of the school districts in the state of Minnesota on an ongoing basis, including some beginning trial basis of a performance pay type of schedule to be brought forward. We have about five accountability features that, you know, we think are very important, and we'll fight for all of them.
Senator Mull?
We've already indicated that we are open to discussions about accountability language. That's obviously going to be negotiated out. But let me make some comments about the way the governor responded to education investments just about an hour ago. And he was very quick to somehow link, at least on the Senate side, our concern about a more significant investment in education to the, I think, what did he call it, the 800-pound gorilla or something like that, the education Minnesota. Well, let me put it in very real terms for the governor and for the listeners. And I'm going to read some names. Gene Albo, Adrian Benz, Susan German, Mary Jo Hallis, Chad Hitchens, Lene Larson, Doug Lee, Amy Liston, William Markovich, Ed Nelson, Chad Palm, Jeff Peralt, Gene Tester, Miles Bakken, Gary Haugo, Sharon Lemke, Gail Mohn, Denise Oliver, and Gary Olson. That's 17 faculty members and two principals that have been issued layoff notices from my hometown of Crookston, which is not a large city. They have to cut $1.5 million from the budget based upon the budget that he submitted. That's very real. That's very real, not only to those teachers and principals, but it's very real to the students that attend that school district, because they're going to be in classes that have larger class sizes now. They're not going to have the investments to make in state-of-the-art technology and all of the rest. It seems to me that the one thing that is paid off for this state is solid investments in public education. And that's why we're fighting this fight. That's why it's important to us. We feel very strongly that those investments make a lot of sense. That's what part of this is all about.
Speaker Swiggum, given the importance of education to the state of Minnesota, K-12 and higher education, shouldn't the state significantly increase its spending on education projects, even if it means scaling back significantly the size of the tax cut?
I'd like to divorce the two questions that you asked, if I could, Gary. The House bill significantly does increase funding for education over the governor's recommendation, both K-12 and higher education. When we took the governor's budget and listened to citizens in the state, when we took the governor's recommendations, we heard from people that the priorities that he laid out were just not appropriate, whether it be extending the sales tax to labor or services on the tax side, or whether it be the fairly small increases for education, for nursing homes on the spending side. And what we did in the House is we tried to refocus, staying within the governor's parameters, refocus dollars to education, higher education, nursing homes. We're certainly flexible. We're certainly recognizing the importance of the investments in those areas. But I think if when you added the money that we had in the tax bill that, you know, was debt service equalization or equalization dollars of some type, we increased to K-12 the money going to education four times what the governor recommended, still staying within the parameters of the governor's tax spend. So we just set what we think are better priorities. We'll work it out with the Senate. That there is some difference, not a great deal in this area. So I think this is work something that we'll be able to come forward with.
Okay. Back to the callers. John, your question, please.
Yeah. I'd like to know what bills did they actually get passed into law this session, and if so, a pay increase for themselves was among them, being that the budget wasn't passed, and that the I'm a little nervous. that inflation was about 2.9%, and I'm in the union, and we negotiated a contract for 5%, leaving us with the 2.1% increase over inflation. That's taking into account for the high heating costs and the high fuel costs. I'll take my answers off the air.
Okay. Did you folks pass a pay raise for yourself?
Not that I'm aware of, anyway. We still have most of the budget yet to put together. And just for John's information, what we're basically looking at is in terms of a cost of living increase or inflationary factor for state agencies, it's about 3% and 3%, which is, I guess, about what they project inflation will be. And then within the budgets that the agencies will get, they will have to figure out how they make ends meet with the energy costs going up or whatever the case may be. They'll have to make that work within that within that amount.
Julie, go ahead.
Oh, excuse me. I was just going to I'm sorry for interrupting, Gary. I was just going to tell John that specifically no pay increase for legislators did pass. In fact, I don't think it was even brought forward in the House or Senate bills. And right now in the global negotiations that Senator Moe and I are working on, we're working right now on numbers, John, that would be over the 2-year period of time. Be an increase of state spending of about 6.3 to 6.5%. That would be over the 2-year period of time, which would be fairly comparable to the inflation rate that John is speaking about in his own personal life.
Julie, you're next. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. My question is, what are the possibilities?
Can you speak up just a little bit, Julie? We're having a hard time hearing you.
What are some of the possibilities? Some of the bills can be passed earlier in the legislation, so there's not so much this last-minute stuff.
Okay.
Where...
Okay, I think we get your point, Julie. Are there changes that you guys could make in the way that the legislative system works so that it would be more efficient?
Yes, there are changes that we could make. We could operate off the November forecast instead of using the November forecast and then having the later one in, I think it's in March. April or March, something like that. But you can imagine why we do that. We want the economists to give us the best possible projection as to what the resources will be as we fit them into the tax bill and into the various budget bills. Again, I want to point out to Julie and to everybody else, if it were easy to go through those budget documents, and keep in mind, it takes the administration 8 months to put together the budget. It takes many, many hundreds of people within the administration at least 8 months to put together the budget document, which is submitted to the legislature. I mean, folks have to at least allow us an opportunity to get feedback from the general public about what the governor's recommending and then try to make the appropriate decisions. Now, after all of that is done, certainly administrations generally get most of their way on this, But there's going to be some legitimate differences of opinion on many parts of that budget. So, I suspect there are ways. We could just simply say we'll use the November forecast. We won't use the one later on in the year. We could say, let's just take the governor's budget and run. We could move deadlines back up and force the legislature into having budget hearings at an accelerated pace early on. Sure, there are all kinds of things that probably could be done, but I'm not necessarily certain they will result in a better product in the long run. We have a glitch here. There's no question about it. It's not unheard of. It's been done before. We'll negotiate this out, and the governor will call a one-day special session. We'll pass the budget.
Speaker Swiggum.
Well, Gary, Julie, I'm not going to try to necessarily support the process, although it's probably the best process this world has ever seen from the standpoint of involving citizens and not having one person, a dictator, make a decision. Certainly, we should have finished our work at the end of the session. I will apologize for that. We should have been done. Let's just assume as we go into extra innings or we go into overtime, the product will be better. As the first caller stated, it's important to have a good product. I think that was Bernadette that mentioned that. But Julie, you know, I don't think that you want us just to take what the governor gave to us from his recommendations and put them into law. I'm going to guess that most citizens of the state of Minnesota, from what we heard anyway, do not want the sales taxes raised and extended to services and to labor. I'm going to guess that most citizens of the state maybe wanted us to do a little better by education than a 0% increase the first year, and I think you recommended 2% the second year. Nursing homes the same, 0 and 2. That was the governor's recommendations, Julie, and from what we've heard from citizens, understand we have some differences, but we've also heard that those recommendations were not where Minnesotans were at either.
John, your question, please.
Yes, I'm a senior and using prescription drugs. First off, I want to thank Senator Moe and the other senators in the Senate for passing the Fair Drug Pricing Act bill. What I don't understand is the opposition that this bill has had in the House, the Republican-controlled House, for the last 2 years. That's House File House File 944. I don't understand why Representative Swiggum is and his Republican-controlled House are so opposed to a bill which would give people, at least 500,000 people in the state of Minnesota, an opportunity to buy prescription drugs at 15% to 20% less than what they're paying for right now.
Okay, Mr. Speaker.
Well, John, I'm not sure that criticism is exactly fair the way you portray it. As you know, we have begun the last 3 years. I think it started in 1999, the Senior Prescription Drug Program, extended it last year to the developmentally disabled population. That's the program where we're able to help seniors who have low incomes and high drug costs, help them obtain and pay for their drugs through a prescription program. We're also right now and looking at what the Congress, what the feds are going to do. Prescription drugs, inclusion in Medicare, not inclusion in Medicare is a very, very important issue in Washington, D.C. at this time. It just seemed to be prudent from our standpoint to kind of wait and see what the feds are going to do in relationship to their Medicare coverage for prescription drugs, and then we can act upon enhancing our prescription drug program next year after we see what the feds will do.
Senator Moe, care to comment?
Well, again, we expanded the senior drug program in our Health and Human Services bill. Hopefully we can reach agreement on that with the House. And then, yes, as John indicated, we did pass the Fair Drug Pricing Act, and I just want John to know that that was passed, I believe, in Maine, and there was a court test about it. It was brought before the court. The judge has sided with the state of Maine on the bill and against the pharmaceutical industries, and so John can rest assured that bill will be back before us with even more strength the next session and in the future.
Given the very real philosophical differences between the Democrats and Republicans at the legislature, I wanted to ask you the same question I asked the governor earlier. It's kind of a goofy question, but is it possible that we in Minnesota find ourselves both overtaxed and at the same time underfunding very legitimate needs that the government should be addressing? Kind of an odd conundrum that we find ourselves in.
I think, Gary, I think that's that is kind of it is an interesting statement. But I think if you listen to folks, they will say we should do more about relieving congestion in the here in this metropolitan area, doing more for mass transit out where I come from. They want better roads and bridges. I think we all know there's going to be increased pressures on our natural resources based upon demographic trends. Certainly. We hear, at least from parents and the educational institutions, that we have to invest more in education. So you get the notion from all of that that folks want us to spend even more of their tax dollars in those areas. But the flip side of that, of course, you're right. There are some tax areas where I think we have made progress in these last few years, and certainly we'd like to make some more progress in the property tax area as well. I suspect that's a balance we'll always have to try to strike out.
Mr. Speaker?
I think, Gary, your question begs the response of balance, that we need to strike the right balance between taxing and spending. I do happen to believe that Minnesota is too highly taxed, that we can move ourselves out of the top 10 in taxation in all of our categories, and still provide the services to citizens that we need and that we want in Minnesota. You know, we want better schools than they have in Arkansas. Our roads freeze and thaw that they don't do in Arizona. So that is certainly additional costs. I think besides the balance, Gary, it gets to that question of priorities. You know, we have to together agree the government should do roads and bridges. The government should do public safety, public education, and then we get down the line as to other services that we provide. And you know, the question gets to be how much, to what extent, and you know, how much are we going to let government and politicians be making those decisions as opposed to families or individuals themselves.
Don't have much time left, but a quick estimate from each of you as to when it is that you think an agreement finally will be reached that can set in motion then all the conference committees and passing of bills and the rest?
Whatever date I or Roger say will be wrong. just know that. Let me say the 1st of June, the end of May, 1st of June would be ideal. If we could get to a property tax, you know, parameter agreement soon.
Okay. Senator Moe?
I agree. I'd prefer the 31st of May. It's a Thursday, and then people can, we can have a special session and folks can get out of town before the weekend. So that would be our preference, and we certainly are going to work towards that end, but we have a lot to resolve before that. But rest assured, we'll get it done.
Thank you so much for joining us, both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gary.
Our guests this hour, Senate Majority Leader Roger Moe and House Speaker Steve Swigum, joining us from the state capitol to talk about the legislative session. Thanks to all of you who tuned in or called in. And check out our website for more on the legislature, minnesotapublicradio.org.
Programming on Minnesota Public Radio is supported by the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra, spotlighting Stephen Cope's conducting and soloist in works by Bartok and Kodai. At the Ordway, May 25th and 26th. Tickets at www.thespco.org.
That's it for Midday today. Gary Eichten here. Thanks for tuning in. Do stay tuned. Talk of the Nation is coming up next.
On the next All Things Considered, a former foster care child jumps in to help fill the shortage of foster care parents. We'll have that story plus all the news on the next All Things Considered weekdays at 3 on Minnesota Public Radio.
You're listening to Minnesota Public Radio. We have rain, 45 degrees, winds out of the northwest, 21 miles per hour here at KNRW-FM, 91.1 Minneapolis and St. Paul. Windy and cold the rest of this afternoon with more rain as well. Tonight, light rain is likely with a low in the low 40s, and then tomorrow, 60% chance for rain with a high near 50.